12th, 2013 session of the House Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee. We are in session. The first bill that we're going to hear this morning is House Bill 3201. Beth, would you please give us a brief background on that?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3201 would allow persons holding an interest in property to recover economic and property damages resulting from fire occurring due to certain statutory rule violations or resulting from fire escaping from land used or capable of being used for growing forest tree species. You should have in front of you two sets of amendments. There is a subsequent referral to the Judiciary Committee on this bill.
Thank you very much. And I'm going to call up first, please, Heath Curtis. And Christina, did you want to come up at this point? Are you going to? Got it covered. All right, bosses, supervise, move forward.
Chair Witt and members of the
good
committee,
morning. Good morning. My name is Heath Curtis. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Forest Industries Council. First this morning, we will be urging your support of House Bill 3201. It's a case that's responsive to some litigation recently out of California. The primary catalyst for House Bill 3201 was litigation coming out of the Moonlight Fire. The Moonlight Fire started on private lands in California and spread to public lands in California. 2 years after the fire was put out, the United States Department of Justice, on behalf of the Forest Service, brought a lawsuit against the owner of the land, the owner of the trees, and the guys working the property at the time. The only company with real assets in the litigation was Sierra Pacific Industries. They're the ones who had purchased the trees. That lawsuit claimed not only damages for having lost the trees on federal lands, but it also claims some rather novel damages, including full replacement value of the property, and also some more intangible values like recreation values or ecological values. Even more importantly, the lawsuit claimed that those damages should be doubled given some ambiguous California laws. So the punchline is, given approximately $20 million in reduction in fair market value of the federal lands as a result of the Moonlight Fire, the federal government ended up pursuing against Sierra Pacific a $791 million claim plus interest. That puts Sierra Pacific in a pretty tricky situation, facing nearly $1 billion. The company struggled to operate and was forced to settle. In the end, again, given a $20 million loss, the company ended up paying the federal government $55 million and deeded to them 22,500 acres of Sierra Pacific's land. There were a lot of landowners throughout the West who were rather alarmed by that outcome and started looking at their own state statutes to see if something similar could happen. In Oregon, we took a look at our statutes and decided that things could be improved a little bit, and as a result, we came up with House Bill 3201. That bill does three primary things. It first provides a fair metric for valuing wildfire damages. Second, it very explicitly defines the limited circumstances under which those damages can be doubled. And third, it provides that those damages are the exclusive remedy for the wildfire. That is to say, you can't look to other statutes in Oregon law that, you know, given some ambiguities, could be arguably applicable and would allow you to maybe triple those damages under Oregon's timber trespass laws, which have never been applied to wildfire damages. It's also important to note what the bill does not do. The bill does not cause or diminish any cause of action. That is to say, negligence is still negligence in Oregon. House Bill 3201 didn't want to wade into that issue. That's affecting tort laws, very difficult and rife with peril. We just wanted to address the liabilities issue. Second, it doesn't prevent the ability of a private landowner or any public agency to recover fire suppression costs to the extent they're able to do so under Oregon law. And finally, and I think most importantly, House Bill 3201 is not a cap on damages. It's merely a metric for valuing damages. There are many intangible values associated with property that are rightfully recovered, right? If a beautiful house on the side of a hill has a great view and one in the valley doesn't, the one on the hill rightfully has aesthetic values that you can recover money for were it to be damaged or be taken away. We don't mean to get in the middle of that. We just want to make sure that the damages recoverable in wildfire cases are substantiated and evidenced by prior market transactions. So if it please the chair and the committee, I thought I might take a brief opportunity to walk through House Bill 3201 quickly, just the sections, and tell you what each of them does.
Please.
The bill is rather dense, and the language, though short, was in ways difficult, in some ways difficult to draft. If you have it in front of you, Section 2 is where the action starts, and subsection 1 includes kind of the relevant definitions. While there are a lot of definitions here, the ones that are most important for these purposes is the definition of property and economic damages. And property damages are defined as the lesser of either the reduction in fair market value, that is immediately before and immediately after the fire, or the cost to restore the property to its original condition. Sometimes one or the other of those is more applicable and either gets the plaintiff to the point they were immediately prior to the fire. Subsection 2 provides that double damages, as is currently the case in Oregon, are available only if the actor was grossly negligent, willful, malicious, or reckless. In all other circumstances, only single damages are available. And subsection 3 provides that persons liable under this section are also liable for fire suppression costs. This, again, is language that comes right out of existing Chapter 477, Section 090. Finally, subsection 4, and importantly, provides that this is the exclusive remedy for damage to property as a result of forest fire. Now, we didn't want to get in the way of bodily injury claims. Those are tricky, and again, this is an area of tort law we didn't want to wade into. The idea here is damage to property, namely forest lands. It wouldn't prohibit cross claims, and it wouldn't prohibit the current application of comparative negligence as spelled out in Chapter 31, Section 600. Again, it's a modest proposal where it's a liabilities bill. A couple of finer points on this, and then I'll be done, Chair. Thank you. Section 3, subsection 1, provides that the doctrine of res ipsa loquitur does not apply in the context of wildfires. Res ipsa loquitur, as my handout, which I can provide to you, provides, is it's Latin for the thing speaks for itself, and it's an evidentiary standard that in certain circumstances allows a plaintiff to maintain a negligence claim without proving that the defendant breached a duty of care. Importantly, res ipsa is applicable only for those types of injuries that do not occur unless somebody was negligent. That is, if an anvil falls out of a window and crushes somebody, somebody was negligent, right? And in that circumstance, you don't have to prove that the plaintiff was actually, or that the defendant was actually negligent. You just have to prove that the anvil struck somebody and that it was, as a result of the anvil striking them, that they were hurt. Subsection 2, finally, of Section 3 provides that a person's not liable for forest fires occurring by virtue of an act of God. We believe this is current Oregon law anyway, unless such person causes or contributes to the spread of fire. That is to say, if lightning strikes, everybody's hurt there. That's bad for both the person's property from which the fire originated and the property to which it spread. So with that, this is like I mentioned, it's a modest bill. There were a lot of ways we could have tackled this problem. Idaho and Montana and Washington are all considering similar legislation that all address it in the same manner. That is, trying to fairly define property damages. The thing I wanted to leave you with is that our landowners are just as likely to be burned over as burn up somebody else's property. And that's important, right? Because we're just as likely to be on either side of the V here. This had to be a fair outcome, applicable to everybody. And we believe that in drafting 3201, we've reached that that place, and it's a good policy, a good outcome, and we would urge your support. Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very, very much, Heath. That's an excellent presentation. Appreciate your review of the bill, and I think we'll all have less chance of being burnt over when the federal government decides that it's time to start managing for fire protection. Questions for Mr. Curtis? Representative Krieger.
If a fire originates on the Tillamook State Forest or any other state forest lands and burns onto federal and cause damage, would the state have the same liability?
I don't believe it would. Chair Witt, Representative Krieger, I don't believe it would, and I know for certain that were a were a fire to start on private property and burn federal lands, that unless the government was negligent in a way that was covered by the Federal Tort Claims Act, which is very, very limited circumstances, a private party would not be able to maintain an action against the federal government. They're protected by sovereign immunity. You can't bring that lawsuit.
The feds couldn't bring a lawsuit towards the state.
The feds could also bring a lawsuit toward the state, correct, yes.
That's what I'm asking. So if the state forest land had a fire, regardless of the reason, and it burned onto the federal land, then the state would have the same liability that the private individual if they wanted to file like they did in California.
Representative Chair Witt, Representative Krieger, that's correct. Yes.
Vice Chair Esquivel.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. That fire was very close to where I live, and if my memory serves me correct, and I think I discussed this with you a little bit, there was no real point of what started this fire. They never proved that it was negligence. They didn't know whether it was a lightning strike. They had no idea what started this fire, and yet they held Sierra Pacific in negligence, I believe.
Chair Witt, Representative Esquivel, that's precisely right. As I indicated in my testimony, the defendant never even got their day in court. That is to say, all it took was a claim from a very well-funded, very large plaintiff and the threat of years of litigation under a billion-dollar claim for the defendant to settle out. In fact, the plaintiff never proved any mechanism of liability.
Ouch. Representative Krieger.
What you're really talking about is Big Brother using extortion. That's what it really is. You get right down to it. There's no other word for it. And who suffers as a result of that? The public, the people that have jobs, people that own the companies. I mean, at the federal government level is where they need to fix this.
Chair, Representative Krieger, many of our members share that view.
Thank you. Vice Chair Esquivel.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. How did they determine that it was $790 million? What did they pull this out of the air or what? Because I know it can't be timber value because they don't allow us to cut anything.
Right. Chair Witt, Representative Esquivel, it's a good question, and it's pretty fuzzy math revolving around not only replacement values but natural resource damages that historically have not been cognizable, legally cognizable in court. That is to say, we've had wildfire cases for literally centuries, and this is a classic use of the judicial system, that is to recover damages when you've been harmed by fire. These arguments about how you damage or how you value those damages have only changed very recently. And as indicated earlier, one only wonders whether this could be as a result of a federal system struggling with inadequate funding and a poorly maintained resource. It's difficult to know how that number was arrived at, but it was pursued vigorously.
Additional questions or comments? Representative Krieger, we're just making sure that this extortion doesn't continue. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate
so much,
your testimony. I'd like to call up next, please. Nancy Hirsch and Charlie Stone. Good morning to both of you. Welcome to our committee.
Good morning, Chair Witt, Vice Chairs, members of the committee. I'm Nancy Hirsch, Chief of the Fire Protection Division for Oregon Department of Forestry. Joining me here shortly at the table is Charlie Stone, our fire policy analyst, and I will start by making just a few brief comments and then turn it over to Charlie for more specific comments. First, in the interest of maintaining healthy forests, rural jobs, and economies, we feel it is important to ensure that Oregon laws on fire liability can be interpreted clearly as the legislative assembly intends. As Heath just mentioned, there are other states trying to address similar concerns, and I know right now that at least one state has already passed legislation to try to address and or provide clarity around their liability laws. Lastly, some of the questions that came up here already. Our department is obviously interested in this bill as well because we are a forest landowner with our Board of Forestry lands of just over 700,000 acres. So let me turn it over to Charlie for more specific comments.
Good morning, Chair Witt, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Charlie Stone. I'm a policy analyst for the Fire Protection Program with the Department of Forestry. Before I start into my own remarks, looking back at some of the questions that were just asked and the discussion of federal government bringing actions and all that, the one thing that's really significant about this bill, I think, in that realm is that even though it was the federal government in federal court, they had to operate under California state law. The federal government doesn't provide the mechanisms, now I'm not an attorney, but this is the way I understand it, doesn't provide the mechanisms for lawsuits. Each individual state sets up its own laws for how suits are brought and how they're dealt with. So the problem, one of the problems that allowed this to go forward in California was the state of California's laws. And so it does make sense here in Oregon to look at our laws and to make sure that they're in the best shape that they can be to prevent that type of gross overstatement of damages and that type of thing. I would say that the Department of Forestry has really three key interests in this bill. One, it's part of the state forester's responsibilities to help you folks to make good policy for the state of Oregon, to help the Board of Forestry and the Land Board for that matter. As Nancy mentioned, we are representing the state as an owner of about 800,000 acres, and so we too can be either plaintiff or defendant in these matters. And to Representative Krieger's question, there certainly could be liability for the state if the fire started on the Tillamook or one of the other state forests. It may be limited under the state's Tort Claim Liability Act, separate from this, in terms of the total amount that could be brought against the state, but certainly would suffer liabilities under such a suit. Excuse me. And then the third key interest is the Fire Protection Program, and I actually worked closely with the folks that put together this bill. One of the primary interests was to make sure that the mechanisms that we use as a department to not only suppress fires but then recover the costs of that fire suppression if there is a responsible party were intact as you know, as we went through this bill. I think that the bill does a good job in all those areas, provides appropriate remedies to hold people responsible if they've had fire occur on their land and spread to others as a result of negligence or not. But it also allows the neighbor who's damaged to be compensated in an appropriate fashion. The bill recognizes that fire occurrence by itself is not necessarily negligence. You heard Heath talk about res ipsa loquitur, but also even an existing statute right now, it's the policy of the state of Oregon to encourage forest practices, harvesting, those types of things. That means necessarily introducing ignition sources into the forest, even during fire season, by conducting forest operations, by doing slash burning, that type of thing, not usually during fire season. And so fire can escape, and it's not necessarily the result of negligence when that happens. And so this bill is saying you have to prove that it was negligence, and furthermore that it's only gross negligence that warrants a doubling of the damages, or recklessness, or willfulness, or malice. Again, I think the group did a good job of balancing. As Heath pointed out, any party in this could be either plaintiff or defendant. This was very clear during the deliberations that as the various landowner representatives and attorneys were talking, well, gee, if we have a slash burn to get away and it burns onto our neighbor, we should be paying some damages to them and make them whole, but not multiplied three times and all kinds of wild ideas of what the value of habitat or scenery and all that is. It should have a verifiable economic value. Finally, I'd say the bill does maintain the firefighting system. And there's a particular piece of the bill I'd like to point out. If you're looking at the bill itself, it's Section 2, Subsection 5. If you're looking at the Dash 1 amendments, it's Section 2, Sub 3. And it says, except as provided in ORS 477095, and subject to any other provision of this chapter limiting the recovery of firefighting costs, a person who causes a fire, et cetera, full amount of expenses. 090 that this replaces has always, for several decades, maintained that one landowner can, if they actually jump in and do some firefighting themselves, can recover those costs as well from the responsible party, and they're entitled to their actual costs of fighting the fire. When the Department of Forestry fights a fire, or the BLM under agreement fights a fire, or a Forest Protective Association, they've got a statutory obligation and an agreement to do that, and people have paid their Forest Patrol assessments, presumably, and as long as they're not negligent, there are certain limits to the recovery of the fire suppression costs that apply to those agencies. This clause that I just read to you is meant to bring that out, that we'll continue to recover costs in the same way that the law has always provided under 477-068, 120. There are limits. When a person conducts an operation and they're not negligent, our collection is limited to $300,000 under current law for fire suppression costs because of the idea of encouraging operations. And if there's no negligence, then that limit applies. So I just want to make very clear that even though this says in suit you can recover the actual cost, those limits that apply to the state or the agencies that are fighting the fire still would apply in spite of this bill.
Okay.
At least that's our belief, and I wanted to get that on the record if there was ever an issue about that.
Thank you.
The last thing that I would bring up is about amendments. You've got Dash 1 and Dash 2s, and there have actually been Dash 3s drafted, which combine the Dash 1 and the Dash 2 into one package. We would be supportive of any of those, the Dash 3 primarily because it gets it all done in one job. And there's some conforming amendments in sections, I think it's 4 to 7 of the bill that just go back and make some other changes. Just wanted to point out that those are largely the result of some poor drafting of legislation way back in 1987. We tried to correct some of it. Some of it's not possible under this relating clause, and we'll come back at some future time with the Scrivener's bill or something to get some of those other things cleaned up. But there isn't any really that very quickly. Some of that stuff deals with land use planning. Some of it's Board of Forestry rulemaking under forest practices, none of which has anything to do with fire liability, and yet there's references carried over, and we'll try and get those cleaned up someday. But this is a good bill the way it's gets drafted with either the dash ones and twos together or the dash threes, and we urge you to support it.
Thank you very much. And Charlie, I want to thank you personally for helping to make it the good bill that it is. Questions for the department? Representative Krieger.
Hi, Charlie.
Hi, Wayne. Representative Krieger.
I was Wayne for a long time, so it is. Talk to me a little bit about the fact that the federal government can sue us. There's a state they can sue, but if they commit the same violation on their land, we can't come back against them. Is that true?
Chair Witt, Representative Krieger, to some extent, I think that certainly is true. The U.S. Constitution, as I understand it, prohibits people from suing the federal government unless they allow it. And for the most part, they have not allowed damage claims for fire coming off of the national forest. There have been times when there have been agreed upon compensation, but by and large, and the case came up again back in 2003, I think it was, over in Central Oregon, a significant spread of fire, the Maxwell fire, onto private land, and the Pape family that owned that land was unable to bring suit to recover.
Please.
The arrogance of a federal government that would use this position like they did is just unbelievable. What would be, do we need to put something in this bill that simply prohibits those suits by the federal government or anyone if it is a result of arson? Otherwise, you get a crazy out there and start fire simply to break people.
Chair Witt, Representative Krieger, I'm not sure that we would, and maybe we you ought to bring Heath back up here as an attorney or someone to deal with that, but I think it, you know, there still has to be causation, and this bill tries to make that clear. If an arson fire occurs, then the landowner probably won't have any liability in that, and there wouldn't be any basis to sue. And most arsonists are indigent or unable to have a suit, so it's not likely that anything would be brought in that case. But
I'm just saying that, you know, if the federal government could do on an arson case, build up this multi-hundreds of millions of dollars of loss and force some type of a settlement. I mean, I think we need to be thinking about something in there that, hey, no, you can't do that under, and if they sued under California law, Oregon law says you can't under these conditions, I think you need an amendment that gets it in there.
Chair Witt, I think maybe we could either consult legislative counsel or one of the attorneys on that if that's doable. And certainly we wouldn't have any objection to further limiting I would point out that one of the things we talked about in developing the bill is that you probably don't want to specifically target the federal government in the bill, because then they have the basis to in court to say that, well, this is state law is not going to apply because it unduly prejudices against the federal government, and they may find a remedy around that. I think if you keep it applying the same to all parties, it actually works better in a court. But leave it to the committee to decide, certainly.
Representative Krieger, not that it's going to make you feel any better at all, but in the last couple of days, CBS News reported that the federal government will be determining fire suppression on a case-by-case basis for any fire that breaks out on federal forest lands. Any additional questions or comments?
That makes
me feel at ease.
Thank you very, very much. Appreciate all the good work that you've done on this bill. Next, I'd like to call up, please, Jim Geisinger, Roger Beyer, and Jim Welch.
Those agents are going to bust through those doors and take you away if you don't be careful. I thought I was supposed to be the rest.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the opportunity to testify and members of the committee. My name is Jim Geisinger. I work for Associated Oregon Loggers, and we're here to testify in support of House Bill 3201. I think I can keep my comments very, very brief, and that we totally endorse the comments made by Heath Curtis in his advocacy for this bill. He covered almost all the points that we would like to make. Just one that was missing, and that is that one of the plaintiffs in the Moonlight Fire case was the logger that was operating on the private forest land in Northern California, and his livelihood was put at risk by this litigation as well as the landowners. So we have a dog in this fight as well, and we believe that this bill, as drafted with the proposed amendments, adequately cover our interest. Just a few endorsements I'd like to make of Heath's comments, though, is that this bill does provide some clarity about what the precise liabilities are and potential damages for a fire that starts on your property and goes on to somebody else's. It prevents abuses by potential plaintiffs who are trying to extract unreasonable damages from people who allegedly cause a fire. And it also provides a fair assessment of damages, and it also penalizes bad behavior for people who behave in a malicious or irresponsible way. So we encourage its passage. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions on behalf of our association when the time is appropriate. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jim.
Mr. Chair, Jim Welsh for Oregon Cattlemen Association, and just wanted to share with you, as a lot of our members are definitely owners, not only grazing land, but a lot of timberland. And in light of the experiences of the summer of 2012 and the fires that blew through eastern and southeast of Oregon, I guarantee you fire is something that we think of a lot. And this particular bill, we just want to be on the record to thank the sponsors and the work of the department and everything, and bringing something that we think it was very necessary within statute of the state of Oregon. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Jim. Morning, Roger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. I'm Roger Beyer here, representing Oregon Small Woodlands Association. Ditto to what everyone in front of me has said, this bill is very important for our members also. I'd like to thank Charlie Stone for pointing out that the $300,000 limit that's currently in statute still applies. That's very important for OSWA members. Obviously, we don't have holdings like Sierra Pacific and other, some of the OFIC members that have hundreds of millions of dollars potential to use in a settlement. So that keeping that key element of the $300,000 current liability for fires not caused by us is key. With that, I'd just like to thank OFIC and the department and others who've been working on this issue to bring it forward, and look forward to passage.
Thank you very much. Questions or comments for this panel? Not seeing any. Gentlemen, thank you very, very much. Appreciate your support. Is there anyone else from the public who'd like to testify today on House Bill 3201? Not seeing anyone, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3201. And Beth, we don't have the paperwork on this yet.
Not on the -3.
Not on the -3. Okay.
If you want to push. Turn over the work session, you can do that.
Question, Mr. Chair.
Do we need to, is this pertaining to the bill?
Yes. If we adopt the -1s and -2s, wouldn't that, we wouldn't need the -3s, would we?
Well,
I'm probably going to need to go into a work session if we're going to discuss this.
I see.
And I'm not opposed to that, but Vice Chair asked.
There's a question I'm just asking.
You can do that.
Yeah.
We don't have the fiscal or revenue statements on the -2 yet either, so.
Okay, so we're gonna need to wait on this, folks. You have the chair's commitment, though, committee members, that we'll get this back before us at our earliest opportunity. Okay. We're going to try and work this bill on Thursday the 14th, just for everyone's information. All right. With that, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3199. Beth?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3199 prohibits the release of sky lanterns, the discharge of exploding targets or tracer ammunition on land located within boundaries that are within 1/8 of a mile of the boundaries of a forest protection district if the district subject to an order declaring fire season. There is, at this time, a dash one amendment that I think the sponsors will tell you requires some additional work. There's no subsequent referral on the bill.
Thank you very much. And I'm going to call up the folks from Willamette University who have been working extremely hard on this bill. Tyler, is it Alexander? And Andrew Fitch. And Matt, is it Comet?
Domit.
Okay. Please come up. Sorry, Matt.
That's all right.
Good morning, gentlemen. Welcome.
Good morning, Chair.
You're finally getting to testify on this bill. Huh? Welcome.
Good morning, Chairman Witt and members of the committee. My name is Andrew Fitch. As we said, this is Matt Domet and Tyler Alexander, and we represent members, students of Willamette University. We've been working on this bill, and we support House Bill 3199 as a way to effect change in Oregon to protect our forests from needless fire. Our intent in working on this bill was to come up with a simple and effective way to help reduce needless human-caused threats of wildfire on forest land under the Oregon state under the state of Oregon's protection. It seemed intuitive to limit the use of items that have the ability to transfer heat to forest fields and cause fire, especially when the fire risk was at its highest. We realized that sky lanterns, exploding targets, and tracer ammunition can be used safely in many parts of Oregon during many parts of the year. However, these items represent a serious threat of fire during dry summer months. Currently, these items are not specifically restricted from use in fire protection districts, while in other districts they are restricted. Tyler's going to talk about some of the goals we have with this bill.
Yeah, we have just three basic, Chair Witt, that these the bill is going to hopefully accomplish.
Introduce yourself.
Tyler Alexander.
Thanks, Tyler.
First of all, it's going to reduce the threat of wildfire on state forest lands during season. Second goal is to just harmonize the rules with the ODF and also provide uniform definitions across the board of these items, which will currently not exist. So. We've seen a lot of fires, especially coming out in recent years from tracer ammunition. Exploding targets in Coos County was one last fall. Cost $20,000 in suppression cost. So these do represent real risks that hopefully this bill will tackle by creating a penalty to stop their use. So.
All right. Thank you very much.
Chair Witt, Matt Domet, I'm going to talk about the dash one amendments and some of our changes that we would like to see to that. Unfortunately, we were unable to address those changes before the hearing, so we'll try and get to those in the next couple of days. In addition to the bill itself, we have sought to include proposed amendments to the bill that we hope will clarify some of the definitions that we felt the original bill didn't quite touch on. We wanted to ensure that we were only capturing items that could transfer heat to forest fuels, and we also wanted to make sure that we weren't being so specific so as to exclude items that could transfer heat to forest fuels, and that was why we chose to try and amend the definition that was provided in the original bill for exploding targets and for tracer ammunition. In addition to that, we also, the last part of the dash one involved, our intent with that was to try and create a presumption that if there was a fire created, or if there, by one of these items, that it was, the presumption was that it would serve to help enforce the statute because the plaintiff or the defendant would have to overcome that presumption that that was what caused the fire. We weren't trying to address the liability for the fire itself. We just were trying to address the liability for violating the statute itself. And then finally, the last issue that we wanted to touch on that we weren't able to get, or weren't able to touch on in the dash one the first go around was to address the issue of items, these kinds of items crossing into protected forest lands from outside the lands. Like a sky lantern can be lit off and travel several miles, and we wanted those to be, or attempt to include those as well as ones that might be let off in the middle of a forest land. And so that was our intent, and I guess with that we'd be happy to do our best to answer any questions that you might have.
Well, thank you very much, gentlemen. Certainly appreciate your very hard work on this topic. It's one of those issues where one has to ask the question, why haven't we already done this? And we're very appreciative of the fact that you caught this and are working diligently to solve this problem. Vice Chair Esquivel.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. My first thought was, why do we have to do this? I mean, I can't believe that we have to go and spell it out. I mean, who in their right mind would shoot a tracer round in the middle of a fire season into a forest?
I can give you a list of individuals who did it in my district. they were dumb enough to hang around to get arrested for it. And it was big rounds, too, not little rounds.
Wow. Well, I think, Representative Esquivel, you mentioned in your office you can't teach common sense.
you can't legislate it. Yeah.
Representative Krieger, please.
Are we going to have anyone else testify on the bill? Department
yes.
of Forestry?
Yes. From who?
Forestry?
Yes, we are.
A couple questions you might run around your mind, and that is, does this include ag land and what we call forest grazing land? If the thing is being done on the actual ag land or the grazing land, but that's adjacent to the forest land, and then also the issue around where you're doing road construction on forest land using explosives, which are those same type of devices, the container devices, and stump removal on both forest land and ag land.
Chair Witt, Representative Krieger, I think we have to defer substantive questions to folks at the Department of Forestry.
I can try and answer it.
Oh, that's good.
Sorry. Representative Witt, Representative Krieger, our intent was with the dash ones to try and address some of these issues. I believe it is ORS 477-505. Talks about in a ODF fire protection district, and you may want to clarify this when ODF personnel come up. There's a defined area that is considered the ODF fire protection district, and there's a 1/8 mile buffer that surrounds that area. Our intent was to be within that statute, and so our statute or our bill would only affect lands that are under ODF's protection in those fire protection districts. And so I guess the only answer would be for ag lands, it would only be if they were within that 1/8 mile of a fire protection district.
Additional questions or comments? Yes, Representative Thompson.
I'm questioning the scope of this bill in that I understand the importance to forest land, but I'm not sure it's a good idea to release sky lanterns over 250-acre agricultural grass fields either. You drop one of these in the right place and you cause a major fire that has enormous economic impact, similar to what a forest fire would be. It might be that we need to talk about not doing this during fire season, regardless of whether or not it's a forest.
This gentleman may have a long career at law school here.
Representative Witt, Representative Thompson, we completely agree. What we were trying to do with our bill, though, was craft something narrow enough that we could get a relating into forest land, because that was what we started with, and several other states actually either have
either already have laws on the books that completely ban sky lanterns, or they are hearing legislation this year about, I believe Montana was one that was hearing legislation this year. Hawaii has already completely banned them. California has already completely banned them. So that it is definitely an issue, and that was one issue or one idea that we had brought up, was just seeking a complete ban, but to cover all lands in Oregon during fire season. But we also wanted to be able to include these other two items that were currently a problem on forest land as well. And so in order to get them all into the relating clause, they had to be specifically targeted toward forest land.
Anything further? My understanding is that we need an additional clarifying amendment. Is that accurate?
That was something we were hoping to work with you on in the next few days to try and capture those items, as including when they cross into protected forest lands, as well as on the dash one, amending that last line basically to say in violation of subsection 2 of this section, rather than to say, I believe it says at the ignition point, and that was because it was our understanding of at the ignition point kind of gets more towards liability. For the fire itself, we wanted to stay specifically towards liability for breaking this statute.
Okay, very good. Well, just know that you're getting the full flavor here of amending the amendments, and there are many other lobbyists as well as legislators that they would feel you were shorted if you didn't get an opportunity to share in that experience. So, gentlemen, thank you very, very much. Appreciate your hard work. We'll be looking forward to your amendments and getting this bill back before us.
Right. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members.
Thank you. Thank you. I'd like to call up, please, Nancy Hirsch and Tom Fields. Welcome back.
Good morning again.
Good morning again. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Chair Witt, Vice Chairs, members of the committee. I'm Nancy Hirsch, Chief of the Fire Protection Division for Oregon Department of Forestry. Joining me here now is Mr. Tom Fields, our Fire Prevention Coordinator. Again, I'll make a couple comments and turn it over to him. First and foremost, I think all of you are very familiar with the department's fire protection responsibilities on just over 16 million acres of forest land in Oregon. We accomplish that through a complete and coordinated system and very closely with our landowner partners and cooperators. Primary to our mission are both fire prevention and suppression. The estimated value of the lands that we protect is more than $60 billion. Preventing fires where we can, or at least reducing the number of human-caused fires, is important towards reducing or lowering fire protection costs, and critical in protecting critical natural resources, as well as our communities, firefighters, and the public in general. I wanted to follow up on a question Representative Krieger had just previously, and that's the question about the lands that would be included in terms of your specific question related to grazing lands, I believe. And this bill would propose to create and protect or provide these mechanisms on basically lands within our protection district. So that is both timber and grazing lands. There are some lands or acres that are exempt that are essentially like irrigated farmlands. And with that, I think I'll turn it over to Tom for his more specific comments.
Thank you, Chair Witt, members of the committee. I really appreciate the opportunity this morning to talk to you. I'm excited about this particular bill.
Would you please introduce yourself?
I'm sorry. My name is Tom Fields. I am the Fire Prevention Coordinator for Oregon Department of Forestry.
Welcome.
Thank you, Chair. I'm excited about presenting this opportunity because I think it's a very good bill that these students have come up with, especially in my neck of the woods when it comes to fire prevention and protecting Oregon's natural resources. My testimony is in front of you, so what I have to say will be brief, just cover the highlights for your benefit. First of all, sky lanterns, exploding targets, and tracer ammunition can currently be prohibited on a district-by-district basis within the Oregon Department of Forestry's protection under something we call public use restrictions or regulated use closure. That doesn't mean that every district can choose to do so at that time. They pretty much choose from a list of restrictions that is appropriate for their area. And for example, over on the Oregon coast, within their regulated use closure, they prohibit campfires above the high tide line. So that really wouldn't make sense for someone over in the Deschutes County area. So it's very particular to their areas. Directly prohibiting these acts, however, in statute, eliminates the process of each of the department's protection districts from individually identifying these acts as prohibited. Since 2007, we've had 35 fires that have been caused by tracer ammunition, exploding targets, incendiary-type ammunition. That's since 2007. In 2007, many of you might remember a fire we refer to as the 1500 Road Fire that burned about 360 acres and cost $1.4 million to suppress. And that was from a round of tracer ammunition, which our investigators had determined. Even by eliminating the 1500 Road Fire, or a fire similar to that, could play a significant role in making a difference in the lives, natural resources, and communities we protect. Sky lanterns are relatively new here in the United States. They go back centuries in other countries for festivals and festivities and whatnot. And I first got my look at them in the animated movie with my family at the movie Tangled, where the premise of the movie was to let off sky lanterns to alert their missing daughter to come home. And being in the fire business, sitting there with my daughter, I kind of had a little hiccup of, oh my gosh, what are we doing here? What kind of message are we sending? And even today, as you turn on your TV, you'll see advertisements at the end of certain commercials where they're lighting off sky lanterns. And again, I have to take a step back and wonder, what kind of messages are we sending? They look cool and everything, but if we wind up with another 1500 road fire, or we get conditions like they had in Colorado last year, we could be looking at some major, major wildfires. So, thank you again for the opportunity. I appreciate your support in supporting House Bill 3199, and I'll be happy to take any questions.
Thank you very much. Representative Krieger.
Would this prohibit the military from using tracer ammunition?
I believe that there is legislation in place that are looking at certain areas where the military can still conduct those activities, but I am unaware of that right now.
And also on the tracer ammunition, do you know how many of those fires that were started by the landowner shooting tracer ammunition, or is this about someone else on his property?
It's determined to be someone else out target practicing, scoping their weapons to see where the bullets go when they fire them.
Okay. Representative Plum, did you have something?
Oh, I'm trying to figure out if I have something or not. Do you know if the definition of sky lantern is only these devices when they're airborne? Because sometimes they're used important cultural festivals in the water, like Loy Katong, which is a Thai festival in November. That's where you. That's where these came from, I think, in Cambodia and Laos. I have no idea if the Thai people hear when they do their festivals, but I've seen them in the water. I've seen them in the air, too, but that's in November in the rainy season in Thailand. Here, I'm wondering if they used to put them in the water and the rivers. And is this, does this only talk about them being in the air and not necessarily in the water?
Chair Witt, Representative Klim, I'm not sure if Tom has anything specific on that, but what I would say is that for the current definition, and I think Tom mentioned it's also defined and referenced in Oregon Fire Code, for the purposes of this bill, we would be strictly, the prohibition essentially would be limiting that risk during fire season within the districts, and if there's an unintended consequence there, that's certainly something that we could look into as it relates to the cultural use.
Thank you, Charlie.
Chair Witt, again for the record, Charlie Stone with the Department of Forestry. On that question, actually, within the bill, the definition of sky lantern says it has a open flame or produced by another source to become or remain airborne. So it would have to be in the air to be a sky lantern. On the water would not come under this.
Yes, Representative Krieger.
For any of you, how many of these incidents that you're talking about took place outside of the declared fire season?
Chair Witt, Representative Krieger, I would have to look up that information and get back to you on that.
I would assume, Mr. Chair, that this exploding targets is getting to be actually a sport. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to have a fire season implementation in the bill. That's when it applies. And outside of that, and I also have a little concern about property rights, what I do on my property. I'm not going to do it during fire season. My God, I got the National Tree Farm down there. But I'll tell you a story. I came home about a year and a half ago, and I put in a brand new 6-inch post, concrete in to hang a gate, and I come back about a week later, and it looks like someone took a machete and whacked it off on either side. My grandson, Dylan was out here again. Well, come to find out, it wasn't Dylan. It was Dylan's father. And they'd had one of these exploding devices, and they put it on top and shot it, and it just sheared off the post. So these things do happen. It took me about a month to figure out who did it, but I would have a concern outside of the fire season. I got no problem. I mean, inside the fire season, a little bit of a problem if you're starting to restrict what I do on my property. If I don't have enough brains to be responsible, then I can suffer the consequence. Other people around all of these issues, these sky lanterns, I understand that, but those are just a couple of the concerns I have the way it's written now.
And a gentleman from Willamette University, you may want to visit with Representative Krieger on that issue. Representative Unger.
Thank you, Chair Witt. Sky lanterns that don't have open flames, I understand that there's lots of new sky lanterns that kind of, they burn a little, I don't even know what it is, but it's not a flame. Yeah, it's like a little matter, like almost like a little sponge, like coal sponge-like substances. Are those fire concerns? Would they not be covered under this bill, and should they be covered?
Chair Witt, Representative Unker, it is my understanding that as defined, it would have to be carrying an open flame.
Can I have a quick follow-up?
Please.
Are we missing out on other potential fire-starting sky lanterns, or are those other non-open flame lanterns not really a fire concern?
Chair Witt, Representative Unger, at this time, I don't believe that those would be a concern. We have other laws and statute that specifically address open flame, such as campfires and other debris burning fires. And anytime you introduce open flame to vegetation, you run the risk of having a fire. So we are primarily concerned with open flame, transfer of heat.
Thanks. Representative Krieger?
Mr. Chair, you might ask Representative Unger if he wants to declare a conflict of interest regarding his wedding. You told me I want to make sure you haven't done that.
We're not voting on this bill right now. But kind of. I'm okay right now, Chair. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much.
I'm going to tell you a secret.
By the way, Representative Krieger, the blowing of stumps and now trees falls under the recreational statutes. Representative Klim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On that last point, the definition of skylanter does say produced by an open flame or produced by another source to become or remain airborne. So I think it would cover whatever else is doing it. But I actually am not sure that the way this is written would incorporate what I was talking about in the water, because it just defines skylantern as something that uses heated air to become airborne. It doesn't say while airborne. It just says it would use it to become airborne. And I think the word while would make it clear that this is aimed at releasing it into the sky. Obviously, it's got the word sky in it, but that doesn't mean anything in legalese. That's the definition is what's important. So I think there might be a slight tweak there needed, potentially. Although maybe it's not a good idea to be releasing them in a river, too, for that matter, during fire season. I haven't really thought about that.
So maybe the sponsors could visit with Representative Klim to get that those I's done and those T's crossed as well. Anything further?
Chair Witt, if I may, and Representative Krieger, to answer your previous question, of the 35 fires related to ammunition, we had two of them that occurred outside fire season, and both of those were due to ricochet bullets, and one was in February and one was in May.
Chair Witt, also to a question earlier by Representative Krieger, the bill does address the fact that these prohibitions apply during a declared fire season, so that it's not that expansive. It doesn't go outside of fire season.
Okay, very good. Thank you for that clarification. Anything further? Thank you very much. Next, I'd like to call up Heath Curtis and Roger Beyer, please. Welcome again, gentlemen.
Chair Witt, members of the committee, thank you for having me again. My name is Heath Curtis, here with the Oregon Forest Industries Council. We would urge your support for House Bill 3199. For all of the reasons previously stated, skylanders may be fun to release, but uncontrolled floating fire bombs on forest land in fire season is a bad idea. I wanted to take an opportunity, one, to express my support for the -1 amendments as have been prepared. They do clarify some of these issues. And I also hope to take a quick opportunity to respond to some previous questions. Chair Witt, Representative Klim, regarding your question about these luminaries that may be placed in the water, I want to assure you we would prefer them nowhere other than water. But to the direct language of the bill, I think that the language emphasizing that it's used to become or remain airborne, that is the flame or other heat source is used to become or remain airborne, gives me some confidence that this bill anyway is directed at floating airborne firebombs. But we would be happy to speak with you more. In full disclosure, we had the privilege of working with these Willamette Law students. They approached us and asked us for our industry priorities, and this was one of them. They have capably pursued this, and we very much enjoyed working with them, and will continue to do so. Chair Witt, Representative Krieger, regarding dynamite for roads, it's a pretty good question. I would say, though, that the definition of exploding target, as used here, is a target used for gunfire purposes. And I'm not aware, anyway, of explosives that for road building that would require small arms fire.
But, no, my son.
Also, I wanted to emphasize again that this is during a fire season. used in this bill. I, after coming to work for OFIC, in full disclosure, my sister from Joseph, Oregon, actually sent me a case of exploding targets. I was not everybody with my organization was pleased to hear that, but I wanted to assure you that I too have every intention of using those, but not on forest lands during fire season. It strikes me as intuitive, and that's the scope of the bill as intended. So with that, we would encourage your support, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Roger Beyer, here representing the Oregon Small Wilderness Association. We, too, support this bill and this concept. There's been a lot of questions asked. I think most of those have been answered adequately, and I have nothing to add with the exception of one. Representative Thompson talked about grassland or grass fields. I know a little bit about that if I put on my other hat as a lobbyist and executive director for the Oregon Seed Council. This bill obviously would not work to protect grass fields from, because this bill is relating to proximity of forested areas, unless those grass fields are located either inside a forest zone or within 1/8 of a mile, of which there are quite a few grasslands and grass fields in those areas. But I think that that may be a topic for another bill, or, and I would ask that the state fire marshal already has a role probably in this area, whether or not the use of sky lanterns could be prohibited already by the fire marshal. Under certain circumstances, the fire marshal has latitude to control burning of all sorts in all over the state, not just in forest land. So I think that could be researched, but I would suspect it is already covered by fire marshal ability. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, gentlemen. Anything for the panel? Not seeing anything. Thanks very much. Is there anyone else who'd like to testify on House Bill 3199 today? Come on forward.
Chair, committee for the record, Bill Clinton, Carpenters Industrial Council. My members make a living logging timber, and once we lose this timber to fires, my members are almost out of work. So we're in full favor of both 3201 and 3199, and if I may go a step further, I have here a documentation of what happens when a forest catches on fire. And 80% of the fire, the smoke, is particulate matter. That's fine particles, which can go into the human lungs. 20 to 40 pounds of particulate matter is produced with 1 ton of wood that is burnt. And just using the 20 pound per ton, the Biscuit Fire of 2002 of 500,000 acres with 20 ton of fuel per acre consumed and produced 3 million pounds of particulate matter. In 2007 was a kind of a tough year for us. Nature does some bad things once in a while for Oregon. 750,000 acres. Was destroyed by fire. Those fires produced 4.5 million pounds of particulate matter. And the EPA, this is all documented from the EPA. Forest fires nationally, 2000 to 2005, unleashed 562 million tons of carbon. In addition, in 2007, greenhouse gas emissions, principally CO2, from forest fires in Oregon alone, resulted in emissions of 56 teragram. Well, that don't sound like much, but the definition of a teragram equals 1.1 million tons of emissions from forest fires, which is equivalent to 11.1 million cars driven all year, 24 hours a day. Among other emissions from forest fires is carbon monoxide, sulfur dioxide, nitrogen dioxide, ammonium, formaldehyde, methanol, and airborne lead and mercury. The point is, Chair Witt, committee, if we could cut these fires down half, look how much cleaner our air would be. And we could also save a few jobs. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bill. Any questions? Might share some of those figures with our congressional delegation and ask them to pass it on to Forest Service and the BLM. Their let-burn policy is not going to be good for anybody's health here, including the forests.
I've been doing that study. So.
Imagine you have, Bill. Thanks very much. Anyone else on, where am I, House Bill 3199 today? Not seeing anyone. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3199. And with that, with the shift of the papers here, hold on, folks, while I catch up to myself.
Pretty good debate on this. Mm-hmm. This one's substantive enough to talk about.
Okay. With that, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2027. Beth, could you remind us what that bill is about?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is the landowner preference / Southwest damage program bill. So we talked about it, I believe, last week as well, and the dash two amendments would take two bills that you've heard previously, 2050 and 2051, and put them into House Bill 2027. There is a fiscal statement in your packet, no revenue impact. There is currently on the bill a subsequent referral to the Joint Ways and Means Committee, but the LFO office has indicated that that's not necessary.
Okay. Thank you very much. Members, what's your pleasure? Everyone okay on this bill at this point? Not seeing anyone. All right, I would recognize Vice Chair McKillen, please.
Chair Witt, I move to adopt House Bill 2027-2 amendments dated March 5th, 2013.
Vice Chair McKillen moves to adopt the House Bill 2027-2 amendments dated March 5th, 2013. Is there any discussion on that motion? I'm not seeing any. Is there any objection to that motion? Seeing none, hearing none, so ordered. Okay. Recognize Vice Chair McKillen again, please.
Now, this is 2027. Sorry. Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Chair Witt, I move House Bill 2027 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the subsequent referral to the Joint Ways and Means be rescinded.
Thank you very much, committee members. Vice Chair McKillen moves House Bill 2027 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and the subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded. Is there any discussion on that motion? I'm not seeing any. Clerk, would please call the roll.
Representative Klein.
Aye.
Representative Krieger.
Aye.
Representative Reardon.
Aye.
Representative Thompson.
Aye.
Representative Unger.
Aye.
Representative Whitsitt.
Aye.
Vice Chair Esquivel.
Aye.
Vice Chairman Hewen.
Aye.
Chair Witt.
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, the motion passes, and the bill is sent to the floor. I'm going to ask Representative Clem, would you like to carry this bill?
The carcass of my old bill, sure.
Yeah. the dead body. Yeah. All right. With that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2027. And again, Representative Clem, thanks for that that carcass. All right, committee members, I'm going to briefly open a work session on House Bill 2257, more to make an explanation as anything. There have been a number of questions that have surfaced in the last probably 24 hours regarding this bill and what impact this bill may have in terms of raising fees. Representative Whitsitt, I don't know if you have some specific questions that you would like to put on the record to have answered.
Yes, I would. pass those out. I just have a statement. It would appear after a cursory examination of the relevant Oregon revised statutes that the Oregon Water Resources Department currently has specific stated authority to issue water rights certificates under a different name or use in at least 8 separate places or statutes found in 3 separate chapters of Oregon water law. And I've passed out where they are. What none of these statutes appear to approve is the authority to charge a fee for this service. The department is already providing those under 8 different specific statutory authorizations, and what you have on the front page is on their website, so they're already doing this. What this bill appears to be seeking is the authority to charge for that service. They're already doing it, and I don't see that stated in the bill. I see the bill stated as asking for the right to do it, but they already have the right to do it. So with due respect, it seems to me this is a fee bill.
Okay. Thank you. And do any other committee members have concerns over and above what Representative Whitsitt has presented? Representative Krieger.
Mr. Chair, we talked about this being a voluntary program. And that's key, because one word changes and it becomes mandatory. So if you go look at some of the bills in the Senate, other bills floating around, that, for instance, $100 fee on every well. Well, if those wells aren't in the per current name, how would the department know who to bill? So if that was ever to come into effect, they'd have to have all that information updated to who those names of those wells or water rights are in now in order to charge a fee if it ever gets to that point. So I'd have a lot of concern there.
All right. Thank you. This information is somewhat voluminous, at least more than I can digest here on the spot. And I would ask that if Representatives Whitsitt and Krieger were willing to meet with the department to go over these concerns and bring clarification, and that the two of you would inform the rest of the committee as to your findings, I would be most appreciative.
Okay.
Would that work? And the department will work with the two good representatives. All right. Anything further here before I close the work session on this bill? All right. With that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2257. And I am going to open a work session on House Bill 2396. Beth, if you'd please remind us about this bill.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2396 is the bill that would add large woody debris to the definition of material for the purposes of the removal of fill laws. There is a -3 amendment in front of you, which I believe you discussed at your prior meeting, and there is also a version of the amendment that shows you what the language would be in the bill when, once the amendment is engrossed into the bill, so you can read through it. The amendment itself was kind of difficult to read through. There is a -3 minimal expenditure impact and no revenue impact on the bill.
All right. Thank you very much. Members are ready to work this bill? All right. I recognize Vice Chair McEwen.
Chair Witt, I move to adopt the -3 amendment dated March 4th, 2013, House Bill 2396.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair McEwen moves to adopt the -3 amendment dated March 4th, 2013 to House Bill 2396. Discussion on her motion. Seeing none, is there any objection to her motion?
I would just check the date. I'm looking on the computer, and it says March 5th.
Okay. Thank you for calling that to our attention.
The date on the amendment itself is the 4th.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Appreciate that clarification. Record will show that it is, in fact, March 4th. Without objection, so ordered. Vice Chair McEwen.
Chair Witt, I move House Bill 2396 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair McEwen moves House Bill 2396 as amended to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion on that motion. Seeing none, would the clerk please call the roll.
Representative Clem.
It's you.
Representative Clem, House Bill 2396, Woody DeBree.
I'm stalling for a second, my colleague.
All right. We'll stand at ease for a moment.
I must apologize, Mr. Chair. When you're old, you're slow.
All right, Maria, if you would again, please.
Representative Smith.
Aye.
Representative Krieger.
Aye.
Representative Reardon.
Aye.
Representative Thompson.
Aye.
Representative Unger.
Aye.
Representative
Whitfield. Aye.
Vice Chair Esquivel.
Aye.
Vice Chair McEwen.
Aye.
Chair Witt.
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, the motion passes. I am going to ask that Representative Boone, who had this bill many sessions ago, carry this bill. And with that, I am going to close the work session on House Bill 2396. Is there anything for the good of the order?
Yeah,
at this
but
point?
Not all of this is related to that, but some of it is.
I'm not seeing anything. Beth, can you tell us about what's coming up on Thursday?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, 3 public hearings and possible work sessions on 2259, the bill that would increase certain fees charged by the Water Resources Department, 2783, which addresses tethering of domestic animals, 2992, which authorizes the Oregon Health Authority to operate a farm direct nutrition program, as well as a senior nutrition program. And then 2 work sessions, the work session that was originally scheduled for today but moved to Thursday on the Cougar Agent bill that you heard previously, and the 2039, the Outfitter and Guide bill that you heard.
Sounds like a busy schedule. Anything more? Not seeing anything. We are adjourned. Thanks very much, committee members. Thank you.